Good morning, early birds. You've caught The Worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio, rounding up reporting from our newsroom and Montana Public Radio. Today we have stories about tribal colleges, open government during the pandemic, and community health centers. It's Tuesday, April 21st. I'm your host, Jess Sheldahl. The National Weather Service has issued a flood watch for a portion of north central Montana, including Blaine and Hill counties, from tonight through Sunday. Warmer daytime and overnight temperatures will increase the snowmelt in the high mountains, and expect increased reservoir releases along Clear Creek, Battle Creek, and Lodge Creek in those counties. A flood watch means there is potential for flooding based on the current forecast. Those living in flood-prone areas should be prepared to take action should flooding develop. For the first time since the Montana State Lab has been running tests for coronavirus, the health department reported no positive COVID-19 tests among the 153 that were performed on Sunday. But Toole County reported its fifth death, and Cascade County reported its second, bringing the state's total to 12. The Toole County victim was a woman in her 80s, while the Cascade County victim was a man over the age of 65 with an underlying medical condition. Montana is reporting 433 cases of COVID-19. 19 people are still hospitalized with respiratory virus. A lack of internet access and financial pressures are raising concerns about a potential increased rate of Native American college student dropouts. Tribal colleges report more students are withdrawing or aren't participating as classes move online during the coronavirus pandemic. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton has more.
Carol Falcon Chandler is the president of Onate Nakota College on the Fort Belknap Reservation. She says the small school of about 155 students has seen a decrease in enrollment.
And we've already have a total of 17 students who withdrew.
Falcon Chandler says most of those students were already struggling academically before the coronavirus pandemic hit. But Chandler says limited internet access on the reservation is making it more difficult for all students to attend online classes. The U.S. Census Bureau found in 2018 that little over half of residents on reservations have access to high-speed internet.
I really think it has to do with the online, I know it is, with the online teaching, because we've never had that before.
Little Bighorn College on the Northern Cheyenne Reservation is seeing the same issue. President David Yarlop recently surveyed his staff to see how the transition to online learning was going.
On the low end, one of the faculty members was explaining that the response rate from the students was at about 30%, whether it's through responding to the emails or submitting homework.
Federal and state funding to tribal colleges is based on student numbers. If students drop out or don't return next fall, tribal schools stand to lose major chunks of their funding. Onate Nakota already stands to lose roughly $400,000 from just 17 students dropping out. Montana is home to 7 tribal colleges, the most in any state, according to a review of tribal colleges from the Montana Legislative Services Division. Around $200,000 in aid is coming to each college from the CARES Act recently passed in Congress. The American Indian College Fund, which provides scholarships to Native students across the country, is concerned that student dropout numbers will outpace that relief funding. CEO Cheryl Crazy Bowl.
If you lose a student, you might be losing the equivalent of $15,000 to $20,000 in funding. If you lose 10 students, you might lose a couple $100,000 in funding. And if you're an institution that doesn't have a cushion, that's a lot of money.
But Crazy Bull is worried about Native student enrollment numbers in higher ed more broadly, outside of tribal colleges. Crazy Bull says Native Americans account for 1% of undergraduate students nationally, and she doesn't want their overall slice of that pie to grow smaller because of the pandemic. That's why Crazy Bull's organization is collecting emergency funding to help students enrolled in tribal and state colleges pay rent, utilities, buy food, and internet access when it's available. Crazy Bowl points to a 2020 survey from the Hope Center for College, Community, and Justice that found that Native American and Indigenous students enrolled in college are more likely to face housing insecurity than their peers.
62% of tribal college students had experienced food insecurity in the month prior to taking the survey. And that food insecurity ranged from worrying about food to not having food.
Crazy Bowl says the economic shutdown during the coronavirus pandemic is likely exacerbating those pressures. Selena Gray is a member of the Little Shell Tribe and is navigating the coronavirus outbreak as a grad student at the University of Montana, living in university housing with her family of five. Gray has been able to maintain her job on campus and has scholarship money from the American Indian College Fund to help pay the rent and other bills for now. But Gray says her family faces some economic uncertainty as the summer approaches.
It might be sustainable for another month or two, but getting into the summertime, we depend on Dad for firefighting. And so, like, how is this going to affect firefighting, right?
That uncertainty is piled on top of her role as mom and now teacher to two boys in kindergarten, which is cutting into her time for schoolwork. Gray says while the coronavirus pandemic is a new experience for many, she says Native students regularly face these kinds of challenges.
You know, things like a food shortage or, you know, not knowing where you're going to be staying, having to make difficult choices for your education is not a new thing for Native students.
Her message to her fellow students, hang in there and don't give up. Aaron Bolton, Montana Public Radio News.
U.S. Customs and Border Protection announced yesterday it's extending reduced operation hours at six ports of entry along the Montana border. The ports in Raymond, Opheim, Morgan, Turner, Del Bonita, and Piegan will continue to operate under reduced hours. CBP says the temporary reduction is due to reduced traffic across the border. Border crossings have been restricted to essential-only travel to slow the spread of the novel coronavirus. CBP says the reduced port hours apply to essential travelers. CBP announced in a press release that these reduced hours will be in effect until May 20th or until the current travel restrictions are lifted. There have been previous attempts by the Trump and Obama administrations to reduce border hours of operation to save money from what they believed to be light traffic. These were rejected, however, following complaints from Montanans, Canadians, and Montana's congressional delegation about impacts to trade and local economies. The novel coronavirus has canceled many aspects of regular order, but city and state governments are still making decisions that might outlast the current pandemic. Kayla DeRoche has been reporting on how elected officials are balancing social distancing guidelines with the public's right to open government. She shared her reporting with Nikki Willett.
Kayla, thanks so much for sharing your reporting with us.
Thank you for having me.
So part of the democratic process is that people can participate in the choices that their government makes. Usually that happens at city council meetings or county commissioner meetings. How are city and state governments navigating those types of meetings right now when we're restricted from meeting in person?
The right to know and the right of participation are outlined in the Montana Constitution. So that means that members of the public must be given the opportunity to watch meetings and also to participate and provide input. So elected officials are required to navigate that right now. And how they do that depends on what method they choose to do that, whatever fits for them. In Sydney, Montana, the city council is using Microsoft Teams. In Hardin, Montana, according to the Bighorn County News, Hardin City Council is using Facebook Live, so people can ask a question online. And in Glendive, meetings are actually canceled in April.
You know, switching over to all tech-based public meetings sounds like there might be some challenges that unexpectedly pop up from that. Have any groups faced issues trying to move their meetings online?
It appears that mostly the smaller communities are managing the remote meetings pretty well. On the other hand, larger bodies voting on issues of statewide significance are bumping into trouble. For example, the Public Service Commission, which regulates utilities in Montana, they had a meeting where they talked about Northwestern Energy's proposed acquisition of a share in Colstrip Unit 4, and someone called in and Zoom bombed them, which is basically when someone interrupts a conversation with cursing or racism or something that's not related at all. And so they had to put a pause on that agenda item and postpone it because they didn't feel like they had given opportunity for public comment thoroughly. There are some other issues just with technology and people not being familiar with what to do. Lee Banville, who's a University of Montana professor of media law, had this to say about that.
These kind of collaborative efforts are only as effective as sort of the weakest technological links of the people participating.
If you have your speakerphone on and you're not on mute, then that can reverberate through the entire meeting.
It sounds like more prominent meetings might be targeted more frequently than smaller, more rural areas holding their meetings online. What ways can government bodies improve their meetings that are moved online?
Training is one thing that Banville pointed out that people might need to make sure things are streamlined. And he's also going back to the subject of technology and choosing software that best suits the needs of the people involved. And he said that maybe Zoom might not be the best choice for certain groups. Banville gives one example of a council that's doing meetings well. He said Missoula City Council.
They're not trying to run a normal meeting, but do it online. They're really trying to say, like, what are the specific things that need to be addressed? How do we address them? And then how do we make sure that people know what we're talking about?
Kayla, what's at stake if government groups can't figure out how to balance public meetings and open meeting laws with these social distancing guidelines that, you know, might continue into the future?
If there's no one keeping elected officials accountable, that could put voters' interests at risk. If elected officials do hold a meeting behind closed doors, they're leaving themselves up to a potentially lengthy and expensive lawsuit. The public could demand a revote. So theoretically, elected officials could make changes without due process. But if they're caught, then there are consequences.
Thanks, Kayla.
Yeah, thank you.
That was Nikki Ouellette and Kayla DeRoche talking about how elected officials in Montana are following open meeting laws while meeting remotely. Montana issued more than 74,000 unemployment payments, totaling $62 million last week. That's almost 45% more payments than the week prior. The 64,000 payments do not represent the number of people receiving claims. The Montana Department of Labor and Industry says this week's checks include an additional $600 per week as part of the federal coronavirus relief package that Congress passed last month. New unemployment claims have skyrocketed since Governor Steve Bullock ordered many businesses to close almost a month ago in an effort to stem the spread of the novel coronavirus. Some Montana counties last month saw a nearly 1,000% increase in initial unemployment claims compared to March of last year. Community health centers across Montana provide care to people who wouldn't have access otherwise. While they've had to pivot with COVID-19, their ramp up of telehealth and new ways of connecting with patients could stick well after the current pandemic subsides. Nikki Ouellette spoke with Rachel Kramer about her reporting.
Rachel, thanks so much for chatting with us.
Thanks for having me.
So Montana has 14 community health centers. What niche do they fill in the state's healthcare scene?
Last year, community health centers across the state served around 120,000 Montanans in places like Missoula, Libby, Billings, Hardin. They're located in areas identified by the federal government as not having enough primary care providers, higher than average infant mortality, and elevated levels of poverty. The centers, which have around 90 clinics altogether, provide medical, dental, and behavioral health services to people regardless of their ability to pay or insurance status. And some have expanded to meet other community needs like child abuse evaluations, GED courses, and legal services.
What happened to all of these services since COVID-19 cases started showing up in Montana mid last month?
So I talked to Cindy Sturger, CEO of the Montana Primary Care Association, and she says they had to shift gears.
We're on the front lines. And so in those first 2 weeks, our clinics pivoted really fast to safeguard their patients and their staff.
She says in the early stage, like larger hospitals in Montana, community health centers pushed back non-critical in-person appointments to prevent staff and patients from potentially spreading the disease. They designated specific clinics or isolated parts of a building to send potential COVID-19 patients, cut out non-essential dental services, and redeployed staff to help with things like screening patients, answering phones, and delivering prescriptions. And Sturker says most community health clinics were already offering telehealth services, but they really ramped them up over the last month. Here's Jill Steele, CEO of the Pureview Health Center out of Helena.
I would say that first week, we probably lost 80% of our visits, but then it's slowly building back up as people are either coming to the healthy clinic or doing a telehealth visit.
She says half of Pureview patients' visits right now are through telehealth. In the past, one of the challenges for providers to use telehealth was to ensure that they'd get reimbursed for that service from private insurance companies or Medicare, Medicaid. But as the shelter-in-place orders started going to effect across the country, insurance companies relaxed what services could be provided over the phone and video chats. So how has that played out here in Montana? Yeah, I spoke with David Mark, the CEO of the Bighorn Valley Health Center, which has 8 clinics across eastern Montana, and they stretch from Miles City to Chinook.
We have been really seeking to develop a system that allows us to get care to people rather than making people come to the care.
Mark says the health center is sending patients these devices that they can plug into smartphones to check their pulse, blood pressure, and temperature while talking to their doctor. And he says they plan to roll this out in a year and a half to a year, but got it out the door in a few weeks. Mark says using telehealth and other types of technology can't completely replace in-person care, but they do offer an opportunity to maintain and expand care that rural Montanans need.
My suspicion and my hope is that in the post-COVID world, the regulatory landscape will not return to its previous state.
And this is something I heard from a lot of people.
Rachel, a few weeks ago, you reported that hospitals statewide are seeing a really drastic reduction in revenue because they're serving fewer patients. And we know last week, Kalispell Regional Healthcare furloughed 600 employees. How are community health centers in the state doing financially?
Well, when I talked to Cindy Sturker with the Montana Primary Care Association, as of last Wednesday, none of the community health centers were planning on furloughing staff. And in terms of finances, everyone I talked to said they were okay for now.
For now, that's a pretty big asterisk.
Right. And federal grants that normally fund community health centers are still coming through. And the CARES Act certainly helped. Lori Francis, executive director of Partnership Health Center based out of Missoula, says her organization received over $800,000 earlier this month through the federal relief package.
If it hadn't come through, we would lose, we think, about $1 million a month.
$1 million a month?
Yeah, so she said they'll know for sure next week when they have better data, but with the reduction in patients and challenges getting reimbursements for telehealth through certain insurers, community health centers are still short on revenue.
It's not like 16,000 people stopped being sick just because this virus came to town. We're looking at increasingly reaching out and just checking on people, and that will feel good to all of us.
Francis and other community health center leaders I talked to mentioned this concept of maintaining physical distance but social connection during the pandemic.
I do think health centers always view themselves as rising to occasions where there are gaps in services. I've heard of some primary care folks closing up shop during this time, and we tend to do the opposite.
Rachel, thanks so much for sharing your reporting.
Thanks, Nikki.
And that's what's happening in Montana today. Check in with Montana Public Radio's Montana Evening News for updates on the news of the day. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. We'll have another episode of The Worm for you early birds tomorrow morning.
The Worm is produced by Jess Sheldahl for Yellowstone Public Radio. The music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Meadowlark Call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. Partial funding for The Worm is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montana. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.